Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, compassion in Washington State. My home state of Oregon has a part-time legislature. They're only in session for 160 days in odd-numbered years and just 35 days in even-numbered years. But that's just when the electeds are officially in session. The work of the legislature goes on all year round. Staff work on legislative concepts and proposals. Legislative committees meet for legislative days during the off-season, holding hearings, receiving testimony, and exploring potential legislation. Among the ideas that legislators are exploring for the 2026 session, which starts on February 2nd, is a cannabis omnibus bill. The judiciary committees from both House and Senate were briefed January 14th on the cannabis omnibus legislative concept by Rob Bovette, an adjunct law professor at Lewis and Clark Law School in Portland, who served for several years as the elected district attorney for Lincoln County and as legal counsel for the Association of Oregon Counties. Here he is testifying on January 14th before the House Interim Committee on the Judiciary.
For the record, I'm Rob Bovette. I'm here wearing my hat today as an adjunct professor at Lewis and Clark Law School, where I teach drug law and policy and cannabis law and policy. I've long been involved in crafting and recrafting Oregon's drug laws. What I have to present for you here today is a proposal for a 2026 cannabis omnibus bill that has 12 components that I'll walk you through. I have submitted for OLIS and is posted on OLIS the 12 bullet points if you want to follow along, if that's how you learn. First, I guess I should say it's been 10 years, a little over 10 years, since we passed ballot measure 91 and implemented recreational marijuana in Oregon. I would urge this committee, and as I just urged the Senate Judiciary Committee, to consider kind of setting up an interim work group, kind of having a 10-year look back, see how we're doing, see what needs to be changed, what needs to be fixed. I think it's about time to do that. However, in the meantime, what I've been doing for the last 10 years since we spent a large portion of the 2015 legislative session crafting and recrafting Oregon's marijuana laws, each year I come back with a cannabis omnibus bill. The idea being to make sure that our cannabis programs are working as intended. We close loopholes, we fix problems, and we deal with any changes in federal law. And I've been doing that consistently every year since then. I was actually toying with the idea of taking this year off. And it didn't work out because there were big changes. The president announced that marijuana is going to be downscheduled from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. I'll talk about what that means here in a minute. There's not much we have to change to do, much change we have to make to Oregon law to deal with that. I'll explain why. But the other big change was in November, Congress passed laws tightening up the loopholes within the hemp laws they passed in the Farm Bill in 2015 and 2018. This relates to impairing or intoxicating hemp commodities and products sold at retail. And so we have to address all of these issues. There is also a program that is now at risk because our general fund is pretty weak right now. And I'll talk about those two. Those two issues kind of drove me to say, okay, well, we better do another omnibus cannabis bill because we really can't wait till 2027 to get compliance with the federal law that kicks in later this year. So with that, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'm just going to go through the 12 bullet points and kind of explain what each of them are there for and what we're proposing to do. I've also, with permission from Representative Wallen, who has been our sponsor for this bill, along with Senator Prezonsky for many, many years for the omnibus bill. I'll also mention that LC6 is not perfect. It is far from perfect. It is undergoing work right now. So anybody reviewing LC6 that has comments, suggestions, laughter, ridicule, send it to me by email. I'm working with a lot of stakeholders, and we're trying to make this a much more perfect bill. Right now, it's very imperfect. But with that said, I'll just go through the 12 points. There are a few that are challenging, and there are a few that are, I think, are pretty easy. The first category is relating to implementing federal law, the new federal law, relating to impairing hemp products and commodities sold at retail. These need to be sold now in controlled environments so we can make sure we're not selling them to children, to people that are should not be purchasing them across the counter. And the mechanism we have to essentially take care of that here in Oregon, which many states don't have, is we already have a fully up and running retail system for regulating and selling impairing marijuana products. So our simple solution to this is to, instead of killing that part of the hemp industry, allow those products to be sold at our regulated OLCC stores, subject to the same taxation and regulation that all other products are sold. That is already allowed right now. Hemp products can be sold through OLCC retail stores. We're just expanding it to all intoxicating hemp products and commodities and prohibiting the sale of those products in off grocery store shelves, off convenience store shelves, which is the impetus for changing the change in federal law imposed by Congress. That is particularly relevant with regard to intoxicating hemp-infused drinks at regular retail. That's item number two, specifically dealing with that. There's also the issue of, if we do all of that, we probably ought to treat the hemp industry and the marijuana industry with levels of parity. And therefore, I've proposed in items three through six to require hemp handlers to have the same background checks that marijuana handlers have, require hemp production licensees to show the same water rights that we require of marijuana licensees, to require hemp production licensees to provide a land use compatibility statement, better known as a LUX, same as the requirement for marijuana production licenses, and to also require an applicant for a license to manufacture hemp to submit to the Oregon Department of Agriculture information regarding the ownership and location of the premises to be licensed, just the same as we require for both medical and retail marijuana. So essentially having parity for the production of intoxicating cannabis products. And then finally, related to hemp, some clarifications of some recent legislation we passed in 2025 defining what biomass is and what inspect is for purposes of ODA. ODA has struggled with those terms in recent legislation, so they need those defined. That is the kind of the first bucket of the first seven issues related to hemp and marijuana parity and implementing federal law. Switching gears to retail marijuana regulation, we are proposing to allow OLCC licensees to transport, as part of interstate commerce, terpenes that contain no cannabinoids. This is a way to ensure that some of our businesses that operate in multiple states, we have some that operate in 18, 19, 20 states, can have the same products with the same terpenes, not cannabinoids, because cannabinoids cannot be shipped across state line lawfully. Good just question. The terpenes to make those. Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't know what terpenes are.
Yes, a great question. Chair Krupp, Representative Manning, terpenes are what give a cannabis product or commodity its flavor, its taste, its smell, essentially making the product seem the same in Colorado as in Oregon.
Thank you.
And that was a great question, because I can avoid further describing it. Medical marijuana regulation, let's switch real quickly. There was a bill that passed and a bill that contained a cleanup recommended by the Oregon Cannabis Commission a few years ago to allow an attending provider authority, or clarify that an attending provider can recommend medical marijuana in accordance with evidence-based practice and professional judgment. That did not pass because the bill wound up in Ways and Means and never came out. So we're proposing to take care of that in this particular piece of legislation. Switching gears again to marijuana and hemp enforcement, there are a number of issues that have cropped up since we last spoke about a cannabis omnibus bill. The first relates to the ability of our regulatory agencies, particularly OLCC and ODA, to immediately suspend licenses when really big crimes have occurred. We lack that authority right now. Law enforcement has expressed recent frustration. They can take down a major cartel grow, and they can see the same operators, sometimes on the same property, starting up the next week. And so we need to give our agencies better tools to deal with that immediately and potentially permanently, depending upon the outcome of the case. What's in LC6, I'll just let you know, what's in LC6 is probably not constitutional. Probably violates Article 1, Section 9. So we're still working on language. So I'm on it, and we're trying to figure a pathway to give the agencies authority to do what they need to do without transgressing any constitutional provision. I'm going to take a little bit of extra time on number 11. I promise there's only 12 items. Number 11 is a little bit complicated and needs a little bit of background explanation. This involves the Illegal Marijuana Market Enforcement Grant Program, or IMMEGP, operated by the Criminal Justice Commission. We created this back near to the time when we legalized recreational marijuana. And this is a program that affords grants to sheriffs in local communities to go after illegal grows so we can protect the legal market and take care of the cartel grows. The way we fund this program traditionally, ever since its inception, is to essentially take $6 million off the top of state marijuana taxes. And that worked for a little while. We just pulled that number thinking that was the appropriate number. But something happened around 2019, and then COVID happened. And what we saw was an explosion of cartel grows starting and emanating in Jackson, Josephine County, Southwest Oregon, but really metastasizing up the Willamette Valley across the Cascades over into the Bend area. And the tragedy of these particular large cartel grows, usually run by multinational organized crime, basically, are massive environmental damage, water theft, lots of violence, and lots of labor trafficking. So we were running into lots of victims and lots of illegal activity, and the grant program was insufficient. What the legislature chose to do, what y'all chose to do, and I have all the references and links for really from 2021 through last year, was to supplement the grant program with general fund dollars. I could add it all up, but it's probably around $40 million or so. The current program's current service level, CSL, is $22 million. This provides for funding for investigations, enforcement, but also critically for victim services for all the many victims of labor trafficking. And unfortunately, I happen to know that your general fund is struggling right now, so I'm worried because we didn't get the full general fund allocation we asked for as a result of the last cycle, so we had to make cuts to grantees, roughly 30 to 40% grant cuts just for this cycle. I fear that we're going to leave a lot of victims out there and a lot of illegal activity out there unaddressed. But beyond that, my concern is that in the next cycle that we are going to be back down to baseline at $6 million, which is wholly inadequate to address any of what I've just described on an ongoing basis. So the proposal I have for you in number 11 really does this. It expands what we take off the top of marijuana taxes from $6 million to $22 million to provide for current service level off the top of marijuana taxes. My logic being, the first thing we ought to do with marijuana tax dollars is make sure our cannabis programs actually work. I understand, and I fully understand now, there are a lot of people upset with that proposal that really don't like that because of the downstream distributions of marijuana taxes. I get it. I fully understand. And I am totally open, and I have open ears to any other solution to this sticky wicket challenge. I suspect, without knowing, that if it were in 2027 with severely degraded programs, that the legislature just isn't going to be able to find general fund dollars to backfill. And so I'm going to stick with my proposal until somebody comes up with something better. Because right now we have already cut the grant programs and they're going to baseline here very soon. So that is of concern. That's number 11 in the proposal. And then finally, number 12 would allow the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and ODA to do inspections without advance notice when they have probable cause to believe the crimes are being committed, usually supplied by law enforcement and the information supplied by law enforcement. What's in LC6, like the previous provision I told you about, probably doesn't comply with Article 1, Section 9, so we're going to have to make some tweaks to make it comply. We need to make sure the agencies follow due process and the requirements of the Oregon Constitution, but these agencies need authority to do inspections when they are aware that severe crimes are occurring without essentially notifying people that, oh, we're going to be there in 2 weeks, and then they shut it all down. And we've heard numerous reports from law enforcement about advance notice essentially shutting down large grows that would have otherwise been taken down. Those are the 12 bullet point issues that I have kind of as a shopping list for your consideration for the 2026 session. I will continue to work on the language to make everything I've described actually work and hopefully not violate any constitutional provision. And we'll be looking for your direction, comments, questions about any of these items, and if I should be looking toward a different path, or if something I've proposed here and work through with the stakeholders is something you just don't like at all. Need to know that, love to know that, and we can pull those pieces out of the bill.
That was Rob Bovet, an adjunct law professor at Lewis and Clark Law School, briefing the Oregon House Interim Committee on the Judiciary on January 14th regarding the 2026 cannabis omnibus legislative concept. The Oregon legislature starts its short session on February 2nd, and all or part of that cannabis omnibus may get developed into a bill. Back with more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. We have an update regarding marijuana rescheduling. You will recall that on December 18, 2025, the White House issued an executive order telling the Attorney General to, quote, take all necessary steps to complete the rulemaking process related to rescheduling marijuana to Schedule 3 of the CSA in the most expeditious manner in accordance with federal law, including 21 U.S.C. 811, end quote. Well, I can report that as of January 19, 2026, nothing has happened. Not a jot. The rescheduling petition was stayed in January of 2025, and it's still stayed, along with everything else that was in front of a DEA administrative law judge, because there are no administrative law judges at DEA currently. The last remaining ALJ at that agency left at the end of July 2025. So to recap, it's been more than a month since the White House's executive order that talked about marijuana rescheduling. The rescheduling petition is still stayed. There are no administrative law judges at the DEA. There haven't been any ALJs at that agency for months. Weed is still in Schedule 1, and it's going to be there for the foreseeable future. Trump has teased reform for years, and he has never delivered. So, no surprise there. This is a developing story, technically at least, so keep tuning in, and we'll keep bringing you updates. But right now, let's get back to the show. Welcome back. From Oregon, we cross the Columbia River to Washington State, where legislators are considering House Bill 2152, permitting the medical use of cannabis by qualifying patients in specified healthcare facilities. House Bill 2152 is based on a California measure that was signed into law in 2021. California's Senate Bill 311, the Compassionate Access to Medical Cannabis Act, mandated that healthcare facilities permit terminally ill patients to use their own medical marijuana. The act is also called Ryan's Law, in honor of cancer patient Ryan Bartell. The Washington House Committee on Healthcare and Wellness held a hearing on House Bill 2152 on January 13th. Let's hear from the bill's lead sponsor, Representative Shelley Kloba.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm Representative Shelley Kloba, and it's my honor to represent the 1st Legislative District. And have been involved in cannabis policy for a long time. When I was a little baby legislator, I got appointed to Commerce and Gaming, which was the committee that dealt with those things. And I knew nothing about cannabis. And I mean, I hadn't campaigned on, I hadn't intended to come here and work on that, but found myself sort of an accidental tourist in this new world. And it has been really an honor to work with folks in this space. And I have learned so much and met really wonderful people. One of those people is Mr. Jim Bartel. And over the interim, he reached out to me to tell me about a bill that he would like me to sponsor. And like you heard, this bill would allow the medical use of cannabis in a hospital, nursing home, or hospice care facility by patients who qualify as a medical patient and have a terminal illness. So his reason for wanting me to do that was based on the experience his family had. His son, Ryan, was diagnosed in 2018 with pancreatic cancer at stage 4. And he was a resident of Washington, so he was in hospitals here. And throughout the treatment over the course of his life, they had two experiences at two different hospitals with regard to the management of his care. And it was really quite a stark difference in his quality of life. So in the first hospital, they relied solely on fentanyl sedation, which left him groggy and really unable to engage fully in what was going on around him. His father worked very hard to find a different hospital who would allow for the medical use of cannabis. And it was so different. That second hospital and that treatment protocol allowed him to experience clarity, comfort, and to really have dignity in his final days. And I think if any of you have had that opportunity with a loved one where you knew that this might be the last conversation you have with them, those moments are precious. And the ability to connect and not be, you know, in an opioid sort of stupor is really important. So, as you know, a grieving father, I think he needed to find meaning in this terrible thing of losing a son to cancer. And so he worked hard and got a law passed in California, where he lives, to allow for what exactly we're asking for today. And it is, I think, well, A, it passed unanimously on its second try in California and was enacted in 2022. And this bill here builds on what we have as a decades-long experience with medical cannabis in a very controlled kind of environment. And there is a lot of really specific product that is made that can be helpful for folks facing a variety of different terminal things. One of the things that the bill does also is it requires that it be documented in the person's soap notes so that anyone who's treating that patient knows, you know, quantity, timing, any of the symptoms or whatever that they are able to notice. And it's important to have that transparency. So I believe that with this bill, we have struck a balance between a process that works for hospitals and gives them the kind of safeguards that they want and meets the needs of terminal patients who would like to try something maybe a little different than the standard care for a palliative situation. So I ask you all to join me in supporting this really compassionate and pragmatic bill.
That was Washington State Representative Shelley Kloba testifying at a public hearing of the Washington Legislature's House Committee on Healthcare and Wellness in support of a bill she's sponsoring, House Bill 2152, permitting the medical use of cannabis by qualifying patients in specified healthcare facilities. Another witness at this hearing was Jim Bartel, father of Ryan Bartel.
So my name is Jim Bartel. I'm Ryan's dad. He grew up in San Diego. His journey to Seattle, where he lived and was married and had a 9-year-old son at the time of his death, included he was a 2-time All-State distance runner in San Diego or in California, and that got him a full ride scholarship to the University of New Mexico. After he graduated, he didn't know what he wanted to do, so he joined the Coast Guard. That's what took him to Seattle. So he served in the Coast Guard for 4 years in Seattle at the Puget Sound. Got his master's in special education. Went on to work for the Seattle School District, working with primarily autistic children, which he loved. And he called me March 1st of 2018. He said, "Dad, I have some terrible news." And he'd been healthy his entire life, very fit, of course. And he said, I've been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and they're giving me a few weeks to live. He lived 7 weeks from that call. When I flew to Seattle that day, he was asleep on morphine and fentanyl, not able to communicate more than a few seconds or minutes occasionally. Tried to get the first hospital to allow him to replace the fentanyl with medical cannabis, but they had a policy against it. So we found another hospital that would allow it, gave his first dose. And his last 3 weeks, first 4 weeks were on the fentanyl. Last 3 weeks in the second hospital, he would sleep through the night pain-free, wake up in the morning, have visitors every day, and had a great quality of life for his last 3 weeks. It enabled him to meet with family, friends all over the country, college friends, high school friends, and with his son every day after school for an hour, just the two of them in the room together. When he died, I was very upset with the first hospital, and I felt they had taken away 4 weeks of his life unnecessarily, and that's what led me to do Grimes Law in California. When it passed in 2021 in September, it took effect January 1st. It made all the difference in the world to many, many families who now have a chance to have their final moments with their loved ones. We've taken this nationwide now. We've initiated it in the 37 states that allow medical cannabis. 3 states in addition to California have adopted it, Minnesota and Maryland. And we're now have bills in the process in 14 other states. So we're hoping that, and I want to thank Representative Klobuchar for initiating it in Washington, where Ryan died. And I hope that this committee and would support HB 2152. Thank you for your time.
That was Jim Bartel, father of Ryan Bartel. He testified January 13th at a public hearing of the Washington Legislature's House Committee on Healthcare and Wellness in support of House Bill 2152, permitting the medical use of cannabis by qualifying patients in specified healthcare facilities. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for nonprofit community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port service. Please support public media and local community radio. Become members. Become volunteers. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!